It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum number 53. This time we are going all over the world with Christian news and views, but we're going to begin where I'm recording, down under in Australia, where ABC, their equivalent of the BBC, has a program called Q&A. And quite astonishingly, for the first 30 minutes, and it's an hour-long program, they basically discuss Christianity and religion. I just found it quite remarkable. Listen to this from Tim Costello, who's a well-known Christian commentator and was on the panel.
I think I paraphrased Jesus, who said, turn the other cheek. My paraphrase was, calm down and suck it up. And by that, I'm saying we've just elected our first Pentecostal prime minister, who could pray openly for 6 minutes at Hillsong and talk openly about his faith. This notion that we're victimised, we're persecuted. I'll show you real persecution in my World Vision work where Christians really are suffering. But to your question, I do think there are real
now,
issues around...
I actually found his comments quite disturbing. Telling Christians to calm down and suck it up. And I'll tell you what's disturbing about that. There's an element of that that's absolutely spot on. Costello is a very good writer, and he's been an advocate for Christianity in the public media for a long time. I was in a secular bookshop here and noticed at least two of his books for sale. But on this one, I think he needs to be really careful, and I'll tell you why. It's true, and it's all very well for us to say, look, we're not being persecuted, say, like Christians in North Korea, and we'll come on to that later. But that to me is a little bit like saying to someone, look, you've got a really sore head, but there are people who are just about to die of cancer. So don't worry about your sore head. Or, you know, it seems easy for someone who's in professional Christian ministry who doesn't have to face the threat of losing their job to say, look, we're not being persecuted. Calm down and suck it up. Saying to people who are faced with discrimination and are faced with persecution, that's not exactly particularly helpful. Anyway, some of the other comments on the show were particularly interesting as well. So somebody said that freedom of religion is a subset of freedom of speech. The state cannot take it from you unless absolutely necessary. Again, I think that's wrong. I actually think that freedom of speech is a subset of freedom of religion. When you grant to people the right to worship, you're also granting them the right to speak. And I also think we need to be very careful about saying that the state has the right to take it away if absolutely necessary, because who's not going to agree that it's absolutely necessary? One of the other questions was whether it was right for Scott Morrison, as leader of a secular nation, to be promoting his Christian beliefs by attending Hillsong. And again, for me, amazingly, the panel basically supported his right to do so. It was just, in that sense, it was just so encouraging. As Costello pointed out, religion is back. Incidentally, I had the privilege of being on ABC. Again, as with all most of the stories here, we have links on the blog and on the podcast to these different things. But there's a link to a show that I was asked to do on ABC National Radio on hell. And I found it quite remarkable. It took me 10 years to get on to the BBC in the UK, and it's taken 2 weeks in Australia. I do think things are a wee bit different here. But not so different in this. In New South Wales, at the moment, there is a bill going through Parliament right now. Even as I'm speaking, there are Christians who are protesting outside Parliament, but I suspect to no avail, because this bill is to decriminalise abortion. And We're being told it's to happen because the other states within Australia have decriminalized abortion. Now, what's fascinating for somebody who reads the Sydney Morning Herald is how the argument is presented. In other words, no argument is presented. It's just assumed that this is what will happen. And yet, as the pro-abortion movement is fundamentally anti-factual and anti-scientific, it is an ideological movement. I found this on article from Dr. David Prentice in giving testimony at a court case, says this: the science is pretty conclusive at this point, especially those in favor of abortion who will say, oh, that really doesn't happen, and they'll throw up a smokescreen. But the real science, and there's some new things, in fact, that have come out in the last few months, the science pretty conclusively demonstrates young babies still in the womb at 20 weeks after conception, and probably even earlier, do indeed feel pain, and in fact may feel more intense pain than a newborn or an adult. Our legislators are legislating to cause death and pain to the most vulnerable members of society in our womb. And amongst the elites, there is no discussion and there is no debate. It is just assumed. The argument, as you know, is always, it's the woman's body to do with as she chooses, but it's not just the woman's body. There is also a baby's body. And we do not give human beings the right to cause pain and hurt to other human beings. Okay, let's move on to the United States. And let's listen to this former pastor of a mega church and a million-selling author, Josh Harris.
I could take you to the exact spot in my parents' living room in Gresham, Oregon, where I knelt down and I prayed this prayer: God, let me write a book that will change the world. Be careful what you pray for. I was 20 years old. I was young. I was religiously zealous. I was certain, and I was restlessly ambitious. Youth, zeal, certainty, ambition, not unlike the ingredients of the Molotov cocktail. They have the tendency to set the world on fire. And in my little corner of the world, that's exactly what happened, because incredibly, my prayer was answered. I did write a book. It was published, and it exploded. It started to sell and sell and sell.
Now, his story is particularly sad, and it's been widely covered in secular newspapers as well as Christian media. Josh Harris wrote a book saying, "I Kissed Dating Goodbye," which sold 1.2 million copies. He was a pastor. He became a pastor at a U.S. megachurch, Covenant Life Pastor Church, that was actually accused of covering up sexual abuse. Recently, he's renounced the book. The clip you heard was from a TED Talk in 2017. But this past week, he's announced that he's left his wife and renounced his faith. He says this: "I specifically want to add to this list now to the LGBTQ plus community. I want to say that I'm sorry for the views that I taught in my books and as a pastor regarding sexuality. I regret standing against marriage equality, for not affirming you and your place in the church, and for any ways that my writing and speaking contributed to a culture of exclusion and bigotry. I hope you can forgive me." Well, what can we say? You know, Josh kind of said it himself in his talk, his TED talk, because he said it was youth, religious zeal, and ambition, which was a Molotov cocktail. He was in leadership far too young. He was lauded far too young. Was he ever a believer? I don't know. But what he's doing just now is breathtaking because, and again, it's amazing how many Christians say, "Oh, well, I understand his hurt and his pain." No, listen. He's left his wife. He's left his Lord. He's denying the faith. He's professing a new faith. His Instagram photo of him standing at a lake looking wistfully out is not a renunciation of his faith so much as an announcement of his new faith. And he, although he says, you know, "I was certain before," he's certain now. He's bought into all the values of our culture. It is so desperately sad. if you want to understand this a bit better, then I can't do better than point you to Carl Truman's article in First Things. Here's something that Carl says. This brings me back to Harris. It is sad that his marriage is at an end. It is sad that he has abandoned the faith. He alone must take final responsibility for his actions. But he was also the product of and a major player in a wider movement that is proving increasingly problematic. As a product, he was exploited by those who saw in him a marketing opportunity and consequently gave him far too much exposure and responsibility far too soon. He was used. Let's move on to some news in other parts of the world. And let's come to India, where the divorce law, the Muslim divorce law, has been challenged and in fact has been made illegal. Now, what is this? The triple talaq bill, as it's called, has just been passed to much annoyance from Islamic groups. What is the talaq? It's when a Muslim man can say to his wife, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, and just by saying it three times, his wife is divorced. And what was happening was increasingly this was being done not face to face, but by text. So if I sent my wife a text three times or three texts saying I divorce you, then legally I'm divorced. It is, of course, wide open to abuse, and that is being stopped. Then in Hong Kong, let's move on to Hong Kong. And in Hong Kong, it appears as though the situation is getting more serious and the Chinese military are about to crack down. Now, the Chinese use soft power a lot. They use finance, they use political power. But if necessary, I have no doubt at all that they will use the military. And we need to watch that situation very, very carefully. Again, it's interesting that here in Australia, in Brisbane, in Queensland, at the university there, there was, I guess, what would be called a protest stroke riot, where there were those in favor of the Hong Kong protesters protesting, and they were vastly overwhelmed by Chinese students supporting the Communist Party. The influence that the Chinese government have here in education is phenomenal, and that's because of money. Education is the third largest industry in Australia, and a huge part of it is funded by the Chinese government. Now, the Sydney Herald, Morning Herald, has carried a story of how Chinese triads and government officials and others have been involved in the billion-dollar gambling industry, where rich Chinese businessmen are given easy access to Australia to come and gamble in massive casinos in Melbourne and in Perth, and a new $2 billion one being built in Sydney. It was a fascinating expose, an example of what is going on. But again, it's just interesting watching how all this power is being used. And as we know in the church, the power of the government is being used to suppress Christianity. And we'll have more to say about that next week. But it being a Christian in China is difficult enough. Being one in North Korea is many times worse. And I read a fascinating report from Open Doors about secret believers in Korea and the persecution and death that they face, and the encouragement that they get from Christian books. But also an equally interesting article from the Gospel Coalition on how Christianity has stopped growing in South Korea. In 1970, 18% of the population, there was a huge growth, had become Christians in South Korea. 30 years later, it was 31%. That's including Protestants and Catholics. By 2006, South Korea was sending out more missionaries than any other country except the much larger United States. And Korean churches in the United Kingdom, the United States, Australia, and elsewhere are often very large. But now they've hit the buffers, and now there appears to be decline. Stephen Chang, a New Testament professor in Seoul, says this: it's not hard to see what's going on. The younger generation is leaving the church in startling fashion. The reasons are complex, ranging from Western secularization to materialism to high-profile corruption in the church. Watch the Korean church very carefully. May God prevent its decline and may God renew it, because it has been a significant force and continues to be a significant force in world evangelization. Let's cross the world again and let's go to my native land of Scotland, where the First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, gave a fascinating TED Talk, which has been really well received. And it sounds great. Just listen to a bit of it. Listen to the whole thing if you can. But here's a wee bit.
In policy terms, this journey for Scotland started back in 2007 when we published what we call our National Performance Framework, looking at the range of indicators that we measure ourselves against. And those indicators are as varied as income inequality, the happiness of children, access to green spaces, access to housing. None of these are captured in GDP statistics, but they are all fundamental to a healthy and a happy society. And that broader... that broader approach is at the heart of our economic strategy, where we give equal importance to tackling inequality as we do to economic competitiveness. It drives our commitment to fair work, making sure that work is fulfilling and well paid. It's behind our decision to establish a just transition commission to guide our path to a carbon zero economy. We know from economic transformations of the past that if we're not careful, there are more losers than winners. And as we face up to the challenges of climate change and automation, we must not make those mistakes again.
What's wrong with what the First Minister is saying? She's saying we need to be a society that's not founded upon just upon GDP, that doesn't just measure its success by GDP, but includes things, well-being, which is health and happiness and so on. Now, what's wrong with that? As a Christian, I want to say it's a great thing. It's a wonderful thing. And I did write an article to that effect, but also to critique it, because here, very simply, is the problem. How do you define these terms? And in reality, how do you have happiness without holiness? Sin is a reproach to any people, says the word of God, but righteousness exalts a nation. Now, the trouble with Sturgeon and others in their fundamentalist secularism and in their ignorance is they don't acknowledge sin, and they haven't a clue what righteousness is. And so they end up chasing fantasies and chasing illusions. I love the quote from Humpty Dumpty in Alice in Wonderland. "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty said in rather a scornful tone, "it means just what I choose it to mean, neither more nor less." "The question is," said Alice, "whether you can make words mean so many different things." "The question is," said Humpty Dumpty, "which is to be master, that's all." See, if you're master and there's no God, if you are God, then you can make words mean what they want. Let's briefly move south of the border to Rochester Cathedral, where there's been a bit of a fuss about the cathedral bosses who have turned the medieval nave into a nine-hole golf course. Well, what's wrong with that? I'll tell you what's wrong with it. It's a joke. I'm not a big person to talk about sacred spaces and holy spaces, but what are they trying to do? Do you know, this is a place that's set apart for the worship of God. It's a cathedral, and you're turning it into a mini golf course in order to attract people to come into your building. I don't know. How about telling them about Jesus and teaching the gospel? Okay, I was going to give it a break this week, but I can't, because there's just so much happening in the kind of gender madness that's overwhelming our cultures. I'm going to teach you a new word. Always new words coming along. You know, we said about Humpty Dumpty, words are powerful. Do you know what circumgender is? Well, there's a Lewisham counselor. Okay, now, wait a minute. You need to sit down and take a deep breath and take this one on board. A counselor in Lewisham, in London, England, who's come out to council colleagues as circumgender stroke trans. She says that she is a circumwoman, that is, someone who's born female and identifies as female, but thinks she should have been born male and transitioned to female because they feel like they are trans. No, that's serious. That's serious. So that's someone saying, I was born female, I identify as female, but I feel like I'm trans, so I really should have been born male. So identify as somebody who wants to have been born male but actually is female. This is a counselor, someone who makes decisions on behalf of other people. Or there's the news that Caitlyn Jenner at 70 is going to be a mum. Now, that headline doesn't make any sense. The Mirror has it as a headline, Caitlyn Jenner to be mum at 70. Now, Caitlyn Jenner is a man who cannot be a mum. And Caitlyn Jenner is partner or married to another man who says that he's a woman. So there are two men who say that they're women, who say that they obviously must be lesbians, who are married to one another, who are going to have a child. No, they're not going to have a child because neither of them has a womb. They're going to pay a surrogate. All right, I'm stopping there. That's where the madness goes. Or, except it doesn't, because have you heard of Mario Lopez, actor on Saved by the Bell? He was doing an interview with Candice Owens, and this is what was said.
You know, and I always say, if you come from a place of love, you really can't go wrong. But at the same time, my God, if you're 3 years old and you're saying you're feeling a certain way, or you think you're a boy or a girl, whatever the case may be, I just think it's dangerous as a parent to make that determination then, okay, well, then you're going to be a boy or a girl, whatever the case may be. And it's sort of alarming. And my gosh, I just think about the repercussions later on.
Right.
And
to me, I just see depression because when I was in fifth grade, I don't know, it was this weird thing in fifth grade where me and my girlfriend Molly, like we were tomboys. We just were like, we're tomboys now. So we'd wear like baggier pants, the cargo pants were in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I tried to make my voice a little bit deeper. One year, went to middle school and everything was fine, you know. It was just a phase. And I hadn't gone through puberty yet. Like, you can't make a decision about your sexuality when you're 3 years old. I was in fifth grade.
Well, that's just, I don't think you're...
Now, Mario has been forced to apologize and seek re-education and do penance. He says the comments I made were ignorant and insensitive, and I now have a deeper understanding of how hurtful they were. This is to CNN. I have been and always will be an ardent supporter of the LGBTQ community, and I'm going to use this opportunity to better educate myself. Moving forward, I will be more informed and thoughtful. So there you go. You dare transgress against the transgender lobby and you're sent for re-education and you have to commit public repentance. But it's not all bad news in this area. The Guardian, astonishingly, published an article in which it pointed out that school counselors and mental health service providers are bowing to pressures from highly politicized transgender groups to affirm children's beliefs that they were born the wrong sex. And this article actually is excellent. And the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, whilst affirming that churches should minister compassionately to people who identify as LGBT, has affirmed the traditional Christian stance on gender identity and sexual orientation. Not all of us cave in to the culture. Let's come on to royalty. God save the Queen. Well, I love the Queen, actually. I think she's a remarkable woman. I think she's a wonderful Christian testimony, and I genuinely fear for the United Kingdom when she goes. So this week we had Harry and Meghan. Meghan had just edited Vogue, and Harry has telling us all about the unconscious racism that we learn from our families. I would have thought in his own family, given his grandfather, it may have been not so unconscious, at least according to rumors and his gaffes, but who knows. But it just gets me that, you know, they're going to lecture ordinary people on this. Harry, the same prince who played naked billiards in Vegas, the same prince who dressed as a Nazi, he's going to tell us about racism. And then Harry and Meghan announce, and this is the most incredible thing, that they are going to help save the planet by having no more than two children. Well, they'll help save lots of money for the British taxpayer, if that is the case, but helping save the planet? It's not quite as simplistic as that. And it's so hypocritical. Meghan, for example, went to wore a dress that costs more than most people in Britain earn in a year. She went to a private baby shower in New York with private jets. How's that saving the planet? But part of this is just the general atmosphere within the culture. Now, I want you to listen to this from ABC in Australia. Just a short clip from a child being interviewed on the streets.
I just don't know if they're going to do anything. And I'm so concerned with the fact that if they're not going to change anything, then what's going to happen to humankind? What's going to happen to what's going to happen to the whole world? If no one does anything.
You know, it used to be, and probably still is, said that, the church frightens children by threatening with hell and so on. But what are we doing to our kids? We're telling them the world's going to end. We're telling them we've only got a couple of years. Teachers are breeding this hysteria into them. And it really is, it is not psychologically healthy, and it's not really helpful. And I wonder what's going on, because I heard something this week in which someone was arguing that the recovery of a healthy democratic culture, it depends on extending the voting franchise to children. Yeah, what you're doing is you're indoctrinating children into your political viewpoint. Now you want to give them the vote so that you stay entrenched in power. We need our children to be children, and we need our adults to grow up. Speaking of children, sad death.
Hello, Mr. Duck. I look so forward to learning about life in Duckburg, Mr. Duck. I just know that these 2 weeks will be out of this world.
The voice of Minnie Mouse, Russie Taylor, died aged 75. She was also the voice of Huey, Louie and Dewey, and of Martin Prince on The Simpsons. And wonderfully, I discovered this week that she was married to Mickey Mouse. Minnie was married to Mickey. The actor who did Mickey Mouse voice, Wayne Allwyn, was her husband. I love what she says. This is my quote of the week. I never wanted to be famous. The characters I do are famous, and that's enough for me. Doesn't that reflect Christianity? I don't want to be famous. I just want to tell people about Jesus. And in that regard, let's finish with this item of praise. Again, if you want to support Quantum, go to the Podbean fundraiser and feel free to do so. If you've got news for me, feel free to send it in. If you've got any comments, they're all taken on board. You can go to the weflea.com just to see all the links to the various stories here and make any comment that you wish. But let me leave you with something that's coming up in August, the Sing Conference in Nashville with the Gettys. And this is them from a previous conference singing Psalm 100 a cappella. This is what we want. We want all people that on earth do dwell to sing to the Lord with cheerful voice, despite all that's going on. It's the Lord who's in control. It's the Lord who is master. It's the Lord who defines what joy and goodness and happiness is. It's the Lord who tells us what humanity is. It's the Lord who created humanity. God bless you. Enjoy your week, and see you next week.